Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Aya Gruber, who's a professor of law at the University of Colorado Law School, who teaches and writes in the areas of criminal law and procedure, comparative and international law, critical theory, and feminism. She has written widely on rape law, the feminist critique of provocation and self-defense, domestic violence reform, and on prostitution and human trafficking. And her forthcoming book is tentatively titled The Feminist War on Crime. Welcome to Background Briefing, Aya
Gruber. Thank you so much. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you, Aya. Today, there were sort of two universes at display at the hearing, first with Dr. Blasey Ford and then later with Judge Kavanaugh. And how did it strike you in terms of judicial temperament? Because the irony seemed that the first witness seemed sort of composed and careful and judicious, whereas the second witness, Judge Kavanaugh, was defiant, strident, shouting between tears, blaming his whole predicament on the revenge of the Clintons.
It was a surreal experience to watch this hearing unfold. If you were to ask me, if I had no idea about the history of this hearing, and you were to ask me, which is the person who's up for a Supreme Court? Who has the judicial temperament? I would have said Dr. Ford. She was calm and she answered questions directly. She was non-combative. There was moments where you could tell she was trying to control her emotions, but she was trying to be professional and respectful. And it was such a contrast when you saw this emotionally distraught Judge Kavanaugh, who was alternately angry and upset and sometimes couldn't control his emotions and at other times seemed dismissive. It almost felt like a strange role reversal.
But did it work to the extent that in the afternoon, after they had ditched the female prosecutor who was asking questions on behalf of the Republican senators, when the Republican senators came on, particularly Lindsey Graham, who really fired a broadside at his Democratic colleagues, it sort of felt like the Republicans had very cleverly shifted the focus entirely away from Judge Kavanaugh and whether or not he was guilty of sexual assault with these three women and whether he had lied about it. That's ostensibly what the whole hearing was supposed to be about. And then in the second half of the day, it was almost all about procedure and about whether or not Senator Feinstein had leaked a letter. Do you think they were successful in distracting from what the hearings ostensibly were supposed to be about?
I think that remains to be seen. Certainly with their base, you know, they're grasping for reasons why these very explosive and very credible allegations shouldn't disqualify their nominee. And so, of course, they're going to say, oh, you know, this is Democratic partisan performance art, and they're going to, you know, throw everything they can at it. Now, I think that's going to satisfy the base of the Republican Party. I think the base of the Republican Party thought that before the hearing and is probably very happy that you had a bunch of angry Republicans kind of screaming and shouting in a way they probably wanted to when Dr. Blasey Ford was testifying, but couldn't in fear of how that would make them look. I think you probably have a lot of people in the base that are satisfied with that. The question is whether the people who were honestly trying to figure out the question of whether this person, whether there was enough evidence to make us question whether we should move to the next qualified Supreme Court candidate, because there was enough question about this person's character from this very serious allegation of wrongdoing when they were a high school student. Will those people be swayed by the it's all Dianne Feinstein's fault? I'm not 100% sure, because even if we granted the Republican argument that the Democrats gleefully held on to this evidence till the 11th hour, it doesn't make the evidence less true. I mean, it's still out there that we had this very credible witness saying that she 100% remembers that this judge did this to her. And that's still out there.
And again, I'm speaking with Aya Gruber, who's a professor of law at the University of Colorado Law School, who teaches and writes in the areas of criminal law and procedure, comparative and international law, critical theory, and feminism. She has written widely on rape law, the feminist critique of provocation and self-defense, domestic violence reform, and on prostitution and human trafficking. And her forthcoming book is tentatively titled The Feminist War on Crime. But do you think, I mean, I'm not sure, everybody, you know, obviously your profession and my profession to watch these hearings, but I'm not sure the average person had the whole day to spare. But if they did, at the end of the day, do you think Dr. Ford's message sort of got lost or overshadowed?
It's possible. But, I think that there was a shift from the morning in which, you know, here was a very credible witness who answered questions and seemed very concerned with being accurate and telling the truth. And that was a bad moment for Kavanaugh. And I think after the break and after Kavanaugh came on, it was kind of, devolved into yelling and accusations and people charging that this is a circus and a disgrace. And it became very political at that point. And I think that may satisfy some people in the Republican Party that it's just so political they don't know what to believe. But I'm not sure it will satisfy people that they have their eye on the main issue, which is, is this true?
Well, exactly. But my feeling is that in spite of all of the hysterics and theatrics and the woe is me wallowing in self-pity that came from Judge Kavanaugh, I felt all along that this was really, he was playing to an audience of one, and that is Donald Trump. And apparently earlier in the day, Donald Trump was flying back from the UN in Air Force One, watching the first half of the day with Dr. Ford's testimony. And he, of course, naturally, he only watches Fox News. And Chris Wallace, who was moderating the interstitials between the testimony, at one point apparently said, particularly referring to the female prosecutor that they brought in to give them kind of cover, saying this is a disaster for the Republicans. So without being conspiratorial, it's almost like they got a phone call from the president. Kavanaugh said, unless you turn this around, you're toast, buddy.
Well, I think, Trump was signaling that the whole time, and I try very hard in my life not to channel what Donald Trump might think, but I couldn't help myself when watching Kavanaugh testify, and I said, on the one hand, he's kind of belligerent and mean and petulant. Donald Trump's going to love that. On the other hand, he's crying, and Donald Trump might not like that. So I found myself in this weird sort of moment where I'm trying to channel how, Kavanaugh might come off to his audience of one. But remember that audience of one made it very clear in his news conference and his reaction to the Fox News interview that he really wanted a sort of fired up Kavanaugh, and he loved the fired up Lindsey Graham. On the other hand, there's Senator Collins, there's Senator Murkowski, there are other senators involved who might not have Donald Trump's sensibilities and might not have liked that performance. I don't know. I'm not in all of their heads, and I think it's going to depend to a large extent on what we see tomorrow, what clips get played, what's the narrative of how this hearing went. But I'm just not sure that tactic worked. I think the combative, cutting people off, talking points tactic that Kavanaugh used was probably one that he had prepared beforehand. But the breaking down and crying and the failing to be in control of his emotions, I actually think that was genuine. I think that, he was at the top of his high school and a football player and beloved by people. He went to Yale. He became a very important judge. He worked in the White House as a young man. He's lived a very storied and privileged life where people have really liked him. And I'm sure this is a very terrible moment for him. That being said, I'm a former defense attorney, and I can tell you that being really upset at finding yourself in a terrible position in your life and the allegations being untrue are not the same thing. I had many clients who, you know, they did it, but they were still very upset at what was happening in their lives, and understandably so. So, you know, I do think that, you know, it's pretty terrible what's happening to him in his family. And I don't think that he deserves sort of like social media death or never to teach again. I mean, I think it would depend on a fuller investigation of these claims, how harshly we should judge him. Do I think that given Dr. Blasey Ford and her lack of motivation to lie and her credibility, that this would be enough evidence for me to say, look, I'm not sure whether he did it or not, but I think there's enough of a question out there that I don't want him to be, you know, on a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. I think that's fair. I think it's fair to say that this evidence is pretty serious. And if I were making a decision about somebody, hiring somebody to be very important in my life, to work in my household or something like that, I might want to know about it. And it might lead me to go to the next qualified candidate. That is a question. That being said, there's obviously not enough evidence to convict him in a court of law. Absolutely not. And the reason why there's not enough evidence is no prosecutor in their right mind would go to a trial like the day after somebody came in with a claim without a police investigation.
Well, that was very much at the heart of the Democrats' argument all along, that why not an FBI investigation? And it does seem that's a reasonable thing. And even though Kavanaugh himself was asked that question many times, he dodged it. He refused to. He went along with the Republicans, who, for what I can't even recall what their basic excuse was, they mostly were blaming it all on the Democrats not sticking to procedures and somehow springing this on, or as Lindsey Graham said, ambushing them. Do you think at the end of the day, again, we're both trying to put ourselves in the position of the average viewer, do you think that the average viewer might have thought, well, that makes sense? You know, you've got these accusations out there. You've got these three women, only one of whom they allowed to speak. Maybe the FBI should look into this.
Yeah, I just think it's a series of bad calls, you know, and the Republicans want to blame the Democrats, particularly Dianne Feinstein, for sitting on the letter and then it leaked somehow. And the Democrats want to blame the Republicans for, once it leaked, not sort of halting things and having an investigation. And we kind of ended up in a big circus, but we have to remember what's pushing this to a circus-like atmosphere. And it's one thing. It's the midterm elections. And so the Republicans really didn't want to run up against the midterm elections. And once they committed to Kavanaugh, when the allegations first came out, it's conceivable that they could have just said, you know what, we don't even want to go there. This is going to be like really just too much for everybody involved. I think we should try to convince the president to go to the next candidate. We can still get our Federalist Society conservative on the Supreme Court. We could still possibly threaten Roe v. Wade. We can still do all these things. They could have done that, but they didn't. They decided to stick with Kavanaugh. Now, why? I don't know. Maybe they really just were outraged that this was an 11th hour thing. Maybe, you know, President Trump was thinking about Kavanaugh's position on how you shouldn't be investigating or indicting a sitting president. Who knows why they stuck with him, but they did. Now, they could have also stuck with him and said, look, we've got these allegations. We're going to halt the hearings, have a confidential, you know, investigation involving objective law enforcement agents or some other objective investigative body, and then we're going to decide whether we even need a hearing, right, to spare everybody this kind of spectacle and terrible national pain people are feeling. But that didn't happen. Instead, I think the idea was, if we go forward with a hearing right away, we can still be on our timeline, and we can get all through all this, and then, you know, the midterm elections won't matter. But to me, even if this all goes the Republicans' way, even if they get Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, and even if this doesn't hurt them in the midterms, I think there's a larger wound that's going to fester because of this. And I think that these two parties, you know, Kavanaugh is always going to have this stain, and it's going to be a big one. And, you know, Dr. Ford, she, you know, may just be an anecdote in history, but this isn't good for her life either. So whoever you want to blame, we are where we are. We're in the midst of a pretty terrible national moment. in which the politics of sexual assault and the politics of the day are making a spectacle out of what should be a serious and probably a confidential matter, and that's seating somebody on the most important court in the nation. So I don't know. I just think that whoever you blame, we are where we are. It's a terrible moment, but we still have to resolve the issue at hand, which is whether we have enough evidence. And remember, we have a credible witness who says she is 100% sure that Kavanaugh, in his teens, committed a pretty serious crime against her. And there's not really great evidence to sort of undermine her credibility. So our question is whether that is enough for us to say, look, in an abundance of caution, we're going to move on to the next candidate. That's the question at hand. That's what people should concentrate on. And if they're okay with it, then they're okay with it. If they're okay with that job, you know, being vetted in a way in which you can have people claim you attempted to rape them credibly, if you could still, if they think it's still okay that you get that job because enough time has passed or for whatever other reason, then that's their decision. But people shouldn't lose sight of the fact that that is the question, whether an allegation that has the level of proof of that allegation should reflect on somebody who's seeking a seat on the highest court in the land for his life.
So just in the last couple of minutes, I agree, but do you think they're going to go ahead and have their vote tomorrow on the Judiciary Committee and then try and force a quick vote Monday or Tuesday, which is what they seem to be doing?
I think they're going to vote. I think they're going to vote on the Judiciary Committee. I don't know. I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't have a crystal ball on that one. But, I mean, it, you know, I stopped watching the hearings right towards the end, so I didn't see the very end of it. I'm still waiting to watch that. But if any indication of how the first sort of 60% of the Kavanaugh portion of the hearing went and the level of heat that the Republicans put into it and the level of fire they have right now, it seems to me they're going to vote, at least in the Judiciary Committee. Now, I think they have to do some poll watching and news watching and, you know, straw polls of their fellow senators to determine what they want to do about the full vote. But from what I saw, at least in the second half of the proceedings, it seems like the Judiciary Committee will proceed.
Well, Aya Gruber, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much.
And again, I've been speaking with Aya Gruber, who's a professor of law at the University of Colorado Law School, who teaches and writes in the areas of criminal law and procedure, comparative and international law, critical theory, and feminism. She has written widely on rape law, the feminist critique of provocation and self-defense, domestic violence reform, and on prostitution and human trafficking. And her forthcoming book is tentatively titled The Feminist War on Crime. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. The headline.